Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to the Dear Family Courts podcast. My name is Lisa Welter, and I am your host. Friends, it's good to be with you. I've got a fun conversation ahead for you in my very own backyard, St. Paul, Ramsey County area. We are embarking in a coordinated effort to support family, youth, and children providers working with sexually exploited youth. We are working to coordinate services and offer a restorative system response to meet the needs of this particular population and help change the trajectory if those that are interested in doing this with us are interested in partnering. So sit back, take a few minutes to listen into this very short but packed full of information episode. Well, friends, you are about to embark in a conversation on a restorative system response here in Ramsey County. My name is Lisa Welter. I'm the founder of the Catalasso Group, and I am a pastor, and I'm also a recovering control freak. Do I have any other friends out there that are recovering control freaks? This has been part of my story as a pastor. I have been a family mediator for a number of years, and today I run the Catalasso Group, which is an alternative dispute resolution training center for transformative family mediation and restorative leadership. I have a background in social services within the faith community and working in nonprofit, and so our niche in how we show up in Ramsey County and the greater state of Minnesota is to provide alternative dispute resolution training specifically to the child welfare arena, but also to family systems that are moving through significant conflicts. So divorce, custody issues, all of those more complex matters that many families bump into. I saw a lot of that when I worked in the child welfare arena. Families kind of falling apart from a marital dissolution, but then there was this child abuse and neglect kind of swirling around the circumstances and well. So these two issues come together well, and that's why we've designed training to accommodate and support those that are working in the provider roles for families, children, and youth. I'm going to kick off with a story. Last week, I was out in the state of Washington. If any of you have been out to the White Salmon River, wow, it is beautiful. It's about 40 miles south of Mount Adams, which is an active volcano. And this water in this river was glacier water. So it was coming down the glacier from Mount Adams. It had a temperature of about 42 degrees, and the air temperature was around 95 to 104, literally that day. It was so hot. And our expert guide recommended that all of us wear wetsuits. There was a group of 10 of us on a Wednesday morning, and it started out at about 85, but it quickly, the temperatures rose. And he said, you know, your body temperature is going to drop quickly when you jump into the water. So wear a wetsuit and then maybe wear this covering to cover your arms and the back of your neck, because once this glacier water hits your skin, it will shock you. And we were going through class 2 through class 4 rapids. And then there was a waterfall, a 14-foot waterfall, which I didn't know. We had signed up for a waterfall. And my husband was like, what are we doing? Anyway, this guide, you can see him in the back. This is actually my group going down the river. What an awesome picture. Our guide in the back recommended to the 10-year-old in our group that he would wear that protective covering over his arms and said, kids really get cold fast. And so he really kind of forcefully pushed this 10-year-old to wear this covering and this jacket. And this 10-year-old boy was in that season of life, if any of you have kids, where he's kind of thickening up before he gets taller, he was in that stage of life and he was not having it. He did not want to wear this jacket. The guide and his mom made him put it on anyway, and he walked around and he was crabby. And I walked up to put on my wetsuit. He's already dressed. And there's a full-blown family conflict happening in this small group of 10. Everybody knew this 10-year-old was just ticked. And he kept telling everybody, I feel like there's needles touching my skin. And the guy, he was kind of joking. He goes, well, dude, you know, I don't think there's any needles in here. But he's kind of laughing it off and joking around. And By the way, you guys, this guide was just an incredible guide. He was very humble in his posture. He's trying to lighten up the mood because everyone was being affected by the way that this was kind of going down. So we get in the water and this 10-year-old continues to just be a little belligerent. He is ticked about having this coat on. And his dad didn't have the jacket on and he wanted to be more like his dad. And about an hour into the trip, the guide finally kind of relented and said, you know what? If it's not working for you to wear the jacket, go ahead and take it off. Looked at mom and mom was like, yep, just go ahead and take it off. The moral of the story here is that we can get so wrapped up and fixated into our expertise. Sometimes when we're desiring to empower, we end up disempowering people, children, circumstances, really because we're coming at it from that lens of an expert, right? I am guilty of this as well. So this expert-driven kind of perspective versus self-determining, giving people the ability to exercise their free will and feel empowered in the process is critical. And yet we're all humans, we're all really messy, and most of us work with humans who are messy too. And we can get ourselves into these kind of almost like tug of wars, tension wars with those that we're trying to serve, because we know the difficulty that might be coming down the road if they don't follow our lead. But when we're intending to empower, not all of us have the tactics or the tools or the skill sets to stay in our lane. We end up disempowering folks, or we step over the line that we didn't intend to cross. We saw that in the good nature of our guide. He was leading from a place of care and concern. I did this as a pastor and as a nonprofit leader working with young moms who are struggling through homelessness. And I saw volunteers doing this as well. And there's a way we can talk about this in a different way. But guys, this happens all the time. It happens all the time in the work that we provide for families, youth, and children. And I want to introduce you to a young woman named Emma. Emma had a very difficult childhood experience. She was involved in over 150 court hearings for childhood sexual abuse, for her parents going through a marital dissolution. There was domestic violence. The grandparents got involved and there was grandparent litigation. And this was an interstate case that moved to Ramsey County and it spanned across a 17-year period. It was a long-standing case that remained open for a very long time. When you think about the shoes that Emma had to wear, her parents played a role, right? But Emma's entire childhood existed in the court dockets. And every court order impacted all major areas of her life, her sense of self, her sense of belonging, her sense of family, her sense of purpose, her sense of how she made the world right in her head, how she figured out life in general. Throughout these 17 years, her family had 5 guardian ad litems. There were more than 5 therapists involved, from EMDR to trauma therapists to childhood play therapists. There were 3 reunification therapists and 3 reunification processes, all which failed. There were forensic doctors involved. There were hospitals, mental health providers. The Moundsview School District was involved in this. Family attorneys, county attorney offices, polygraph tests, and church communities, nonprofits. I mean, you name it. This family had access to tons and tons of resources and people that were providing services. All of them had an intent to empower, but there was a little bit of this disempowerment happening. Guys, I'm pleased to share with you today that today Emma is now 20 years old. She has confronted her abuser. She's been able to move on. She's headed into her 3rd year of college. She is fully independent. She lives on her own. She has her own apartment with her best friend. She works to pay for her education. And she has told me regularly that she has invited her friends to higher places and calls them into their own greatness because of her circumstances. Emma's actually trained as a transformative family mediator, and she's also trained in restorative circles, and she can facilitate circles with others. Now, you know that change and transformation and healing has taken place when those that have struggled through hard things are able to give back to those that have potentially hurt them. Emma has even volunteered and walked alongside men who are buying women for sex to support their accountability process and their healing process. When you think about the deep level of conflict and the adversarial experiences that Emma was raised in, how do you think she overcame and healed so quickly in such a short period of time? Because when you think about this, really, there's only this window of about 3 years. And Emma came out of a very difficult circumstance. The reason she was able to do that is because she was able to walk through all of her hard valleys with access to restorative leadership. She was given the opportunity to self-determine in the safety of her Ramsey County community as she untangled her journey to greatness. Now, Emma certainly went through her valleys, but she came out on the other side a different person and came into her greatness. And Emma is actually with us today. And I just want to invite Emma to speak to what this experience felt like to her. Emma, go ahead and unmute yourself and share a little bit if you want.
Yeah, thank you. I think the only thing that I really want to share on this is that the biggest thing for me going through everything that happened in this situation was feeling like I had no control, that my voice meant nothing, because it felt like no matter what I did, no matter how much therapy I did, the system put me exactly in a situation that it should have protected me from. So I think growing out of that and being put in circles was really helpful for me. It helped me gain a lot of perspective of the outside world and be able to heal from not having my own voice heard personally. So I think that that is a really great way that should be implemented into the society. But thank you, Lisa.
Yeah. Well, you are a inspiration to all of us, and it's fun to see how much you have progressed and changed. And for those of you who are listening, this is my daughter. This is a child that I've raised in my home, and I had access to restorative circles and training. Now, I was fumbling along and doing this in my own house to support Emma alongside of her journey. But I can tell you right now, Emma is a really beautiful picture of someone, a young person who has overcome really severe obstacles. And her story could have looked very, very different, right? But I think the wisdom of knowing how to walk alongside of her and provide that restorative lens, that restorative approach, not easy as a parent, not easy at all, especially walking alongside a child who is walking through significant struggle. Most of us as parents want to take that away from our kids, and we can't, but we can walk with them and we can do it better. And as providers, you might be thinking, yeah, but you were her mom. Guys, I just want to say that I was new at this, and I was doing this alongside all of her other providers and thought, what if her providers knew how to lead circle and guide her? Would it have looked, would it have accelerated differently or faster, or would it have been less painful, or could we have seen better accountability? Maybe we could have even reduced the number of times we were in court, probably. We want to offer to you, what if you could see stories like Emma's on a regular basis? What if you could see the youth, the families, and the children that you're working with overcoming obstacles because you as the provider understood that restorative leadership responsibility and role, and you walked with people in a new way? It's a very simple tweak to what you're currently doing. And I can tell you right now, if you learn the process, things will work in a great way for you. So how did we set the reset button as a parent and now as a provider, been a pastor for a number of years? I always go back to this prayer, the serenity prayer. God, grant me the ability to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. For any of you that been exposed to the recovery world, Alcoholics Anonymous. I was raised in an alcoholic environment, and I learned the serenity prayer in Al-Anon. but I'm a recovering control freak. And so this makes a lot of practical sense as I was providing services for families, as I kept stepping in out of my lane, trying to help them. And I ended up hurting myself or trying to take control in a way that I was disempowering others. And I want to break this down for you. And I want to give the credit to Damon West. He wrote the book, The Coffee Bean, if you've ever heard of that. And he breaks this down beautifully. And he goes into the conversation, the ability to change the things I cannot change. There are things that are a little bit more universal. We call that, in my world, that's God's timeline. It all boils down to how I learn how to manage the control as a provider, whether I'm a parent, a therapist, pastor. How do I manage control in my life? And how does that bleed out into the work that I do? I can tell you that God's timeline is so much bigger and vast. This horizon is so big. It is infinitely bigger than what all of our lifespans look like, right? But every time we try to touch something that's on this timeline that is actually God's, you will hurt yourself or you're going to hurt other people. We're not God. We don't get to play that role, and he doesn't need our help to get his job done. And as a parent and as a provider, I regularly stepped into the role of being the mini savior. I'm going to go and save my kid. I'm going to go and save these people. And we can't do it. So stay off this line. The courage to change the things that I can. Now, this little red sliver here, you see this arrow, this is your line. You get 1 inch on this massive timeline of life. And this 1 inch is called humility. And humility is about being right-sized in our leadership. We can be useful to others as we serve them if we understand this idea of humbly walking alongside people. This is actually the secret to life, the service to others, and doing it in a way that's not disempowering or offering ourselves almost as that mini Messiah and coming in and rescuing. And so to understand our little portion, our line, and what we have control over, there are 4 things we get to control as human beings. It doesn't matter if you're a doctor, a lawyer, a pastor, a parent, what you say, what you think, what you feel, and then what you do. That's it. And as a parent and a provider and a pastor, I needed a tool set to keep me in my line because I kept falling out of it and I kept hurting people unintentionally. Finally, the last part of the Serenity Prayer says, and the wisdom to know the difference. Do you know the difference between the big line and the little line? Because we really don't have control around the world around us. We don't have control around the clients that we're serving, but we can control the world within ourselves, really what's going on in between our ears. And so this last line of the Serenity Prayer is what's most important to us, to stay within the bounds of our line. I'm going to ask you a question. How many times a day do you tell yourself, that's not my line? I wasn't asking myself that ever. And as I worked through this little prayer, I learned, oh man, I am taking on way more than I need to. I'm getting sick. I'm exhausted all the time. And as I watched people leading restoratively, they had this vibrance of life. They did not carry the weight of the world. They were able to let go and really just allow matters to kind of go in the direction that they needed to go. And they walked with their clients through the valleys of life. And it was incredible to watch this experience. I then saw providers who understood how to do this, support those that were struggling through very hard places, become volunteers in their efforts and become leaders in the work that they were doing too. Now that was a game changer for me because I thought, well, as a pastor, I couldn't get anybody to hardly step in and do things with me. And here, this was this multiplication effect that was so recognizable and so distinct. And you see this even in my story and Emma's story. What I learned, I passed on to Emma. What Emma has learned, she is now passing on to others. And this turnabout, this transformation that has taken place has impacted me as a human being. It's impacted Emma. And now it's impacting the greater good of those that now Emma is serving. So we've got to figure out how to give up that control and create the environment for change to take place with families, with youth, and with children that are struggling in really hard places. And this is where the rubber hits the road. This restorative system response starts with you. If you can create that environment for change to take place and hold yourself accountable, use these skill sets in a way that is complementary to your own needs, but also to your clients, you are going to see things shift. Again, the secret sauce to successful service to others is to stay humble, to stay in our lane by learning and applying these restorative leadership techniques. Restorative leadership, and I'm specifically talking about restorative circles. This is a 2-day training, and then there's lots of ongoing repetition to get the hang of it. This is typically it doesn't feel supernatural at first, because if you are a recovering control freak like me, you want to take control back. We use a talking piece and we share control with those that are in our group conversation or in our team meeting. And we let go of the weight of the world. It feels incredible, you guys. And it feels almost like it's like we shouldn't be doing it, but it's actually really healthy to do this. Once you learn this technique, you can apply it in any department or programming that you have, and you'll see many more stories just like Emma's. You can replace any meeting focus with a restorative leadership technique. So the focus and agenda can be support and healing, accountability, small group conversations, team meetings with your staff or with volunteers. It can be for gathering input, for conflict, for addressing crimes. Yes, you can even address crimes. It can be for strengthening relationships, celebration of milestones, even use for grief, loss, and transition. So you can see that there's just this incredible flexibility when it comes to the utilization of restorative leadership. Restorative leadership invites individuals to uncover their self-determination and their own potential. In the process, there is a rebalancing that is taking place not only in your life, but in the lives of those that you are serving. And so the key relationships of life start to kind of self-correct in community, a sense of self, sense of community, a sense of purpose, and how people are making meaning out of life. There's much more deep reflection that's creating self-awareness and responsibility in those that are struggling through hard circumstances. And it can be very culturally flexible to elevate a group's particular values or norms. So when you think about the utilization of restorative leadership, it's really just designing a container of safety to insert customs and religious practices, whatever that group wants to insert into their decision-making, they get to do that. If it's an organization, then they're weaving in their organizational values. Families can bring in anything that's relevant to them to help them create buy-in for their decisions. Here's what I love about this. It keeps the leaders humble and it keeps us in our lane while creating those safe environments for change to start to take place in others. I've heard marriage and family therapists that have learned this technique say, I have been working with clients for over a year and seeing just kind of those minute, you know, stages of change, putting them in circle and leading a facilitated circle. We get more done in 3 or 4 circle sessions than we do in an entire year. So there's something really powerful that happens when there's the sharing of power, group conversations around their norms and their values that begins to take place and start rebalancing these key areas of life. And this is what our training is designed to do. You may have heard of restorative circle training from other entities, all good and excellent. This is a communication technique that's universal in nature. We weave in leadership training to go after that non-anxious presence. It's really just about how do we de-escalate our own controlling perspectives? And then how do we actually guide circle in a neutral way? Our training philosophy is around those 4 key relationships of life: sense of self, sense of community, sense of purpose, and how we make sense of the world. There's a training manual, there's 4 hours of prep work, and then we have 2 full days of live role play within various scenarios, group discussion, and then practical integration. So it's a pretty quick training. If you know people who are training restorative circles, go get trained in your community. If there's people that you love and you really have a built-in relationship and trust, we would say, if you haven't done this training, go do it. if you want to get trained, you don't know where to start. I'm also teaching at Crown College. I train anyone from Crown College and those that are looking for the certificate online. Here's those dates. I also do it through the Catalasso group, which can allow us to provide group discounts. All of these are available for continuing ed. So Rule 114 for Minnesota continuing legal education, marriage and family therapists and social workers. All of this has continuing ed credits through Crown College and the Catalasso group. If you choose to do the training elsewhere, I really couldn't give you any perspective, but they will guide you in that process as well. So first and foremost, get trained in restorative leadership. Bring it into your home, bring it into your environments, bring it to your clients and those that you're serving. Now, for those of you who might be more interested in a transformational option in justice, we would encourage you to take our Minnesota State Court Administration certified training for Rule 114. This is transformative family mediation. This is a combination of restorative leadership, CIRCLE, with family mediation all in one training. And this offers a community-based ADR process that you can bring on site. You can include volunteers in this, but you can divert matters from family, juvenile court with a trusted and preferred method that the court is really comfortable with. The court loves mediation. We've simply brought those two ideas together, designed training and had it approved by the state court. Now, our training is a little bit longer. It's about 55 hours. There's 15 hours of pre-work that's focused on child welfare. And then it's 1 week of full training. You get a practice in a box. So that means everything you need, you can hit the ground running by the time you leave with mediation forms and all the necessary pieces. You get a manual, there's role playing, and then all the skills that you would need. Again, that's at Crown College, and you can get all of your continuing ed through that program as well. Now, for Ramsey County, we are embarking on a special focus over the next few years. We want to focus on sexually exploited youth. We know that every provider serving families, kids, and youth will benefit from learning this training, but we want to do a little bit of research. I'm doing my doctoral studies over at Bethel Seminary, and we plan to do a two-year period of research between January of 2023 and January of 2025. It probably will go longer. For anyone interested or currently serving this population, willing to be trained in restorative leadership or transformative family mediation, we want to walk with you. We're going to be applying for a grant here in the next few weeks to pursue funding for 50 to 100% of the funding to cover your training and coaching costs. And we're going to offer organizational assessments, helping you think creatively. How does restorative leadership apply? And what are some of those strategic recommendations? I've done this a lot and for a long time, and I live and breathe restorative leadership, and I would be happy to walk with you and your institution to help you think about what might be helpful so that you're not recreating a new wheel, but you're really just enhancing the programs and services you already have with some small tweaks and adjustments. We're going to offer group and organizational coaching focused on restorative leadership, but we're going to contextualize it, and we're going to bring in some other friends from the community. And then we're going to allow you to also have access to Emma to help kick off these restorative circles with youth. When you think about the youth that you're serving that have been sexually exploited and struggling through really difficult decisions, kind of going back to patterns that are not serving them well, why not have a young adult who's a little bit further down the road who can speak directly to them and introduce the process to them? No better than someone like Emma to do that. And Emma is happy to provide that support to you as you are working with youth. So that's really, in a nutshell, where we're going, friends, for Ramsey County. This special focus for sexually exploited youth will be a big one. But if you are a provider in the network or in the network of Ramsey County and you think, I just want to do this, we would say, please, please, please go get training for this. Reach out to us if you have anything, but there will be this very special focus approaching this for grant funding. And even if we don't receive the funds, we're going to create this at a cost that's really affordable for nonprofits, for government, and for for churches as well.
Well, thanks for being with us today, friends. If you want more information, go to our website at thecatalasso.com. We encourage you to take either of the two trainings that you heard about today. You can take them through Crown College. You can take them through the Catalasso group as well. Really just depends on what makes sense for your calendar. And then we invite you to jump into our coaching and group conversations so that we can coordinate efforts in a way that serves this particular community well. If you live outside of the Twin Cities, or maybe you live in another state, we invite you to also take our trainings. Our training standards are very high in Minnesota, and quite frequently other states accept the certificates that we are putting out that have been certified by the state court. So check out our website at thecatalassogroup.com, or you can simply send me an email at lisa@thecatalassogroup.com. Take care, and we'll see you next time, friends.